Welcome to the Learning Scientist Podcast, a podcast for teachers, students, and parents about evidence-based practice and learning.
Hi, and welcome to the Learning Scientist Podcast. Today's episode was recorded in October 2023, when the four of us were together in Portland, Oregon. We were all at the STP Annual Conference on Teaching. And right before recording the episode, we gave a talk at the conference. And in the talk, we speak about our work with educators in communicating about application of retrieval practice and science communication more generally. In addition to this talk, we also had a related paper that was at the time undergoing peer review, and that paper is now out in Educational Psychology Review. And in that paper, we call for more systematic research on the field's science communication efforts. So if you're a researcher, you may want to check out that paper, and the reference is in the show notes. But in the talk, which we recorded in our hotel room, we had a little hotel room pajama party and recorded the episode. And in our talk, we talk about science communication, how we can apply retrieval practice in the classroom. And specifically, we talk about our experiences with communicating about retrieval practice, some of the roadblocks that we've run into, and how we've tried to change those into speed bumps when we're talking with educators to promote the application of retrieval practice. Hi, welcome to the Learning Scientist Podcast. I am here with Cindy and Althea and Carolina. We are hanging out in our hotel room in Portland, Oregon. Woo-hoo! Where we just gave our talk called Roadblocks and Speed Bumps in Communicating the Science Behind Retrieval Practice at the STP ACT conference. It was really exciting. We enjoyed giving the talk, and we thought that many of our listeners might appreciate some of the talk content too. So we're going to kind of talk through our talk a little bit more informally this time for this episode, just to kind of, you know, get the information out there to more people. So in our talk, essentially, we explained that the four of us are learning scientists, and we engage in a lot of science communication. And of course, you're listening to this podcast, so this is something that you probably already know. And when we do this in the context of workshops with teachers and other educators, we typically start by just explaining how cognitive psychology is applied to education. So we talk about the fact that cognitive psychologists study the basic processes of how we think. And then when we want to apply cognitive psychology to education, we build learning and teaching strategies on top of those building blocks. But we emphasize that it's not the case that an educator needs to do exactly what one of those blocks says. We build a strategy and we test the strategy, but that strategy isn't set in stone. It's flexible, and we like to provide flexible guiding principles, and we explain some of the nuance and go into the ways that one could flexibly apply the strategies. For example, we'll use retrieval practice as an example. So for retrieval practice, we would start by explaining what retrieval practice is, bringing information to mind. We might talk about some of the ways that retrieval practice improves learning, direct effects, and those indirect effects. So retrieval practice gives you feedback on what you know and what you don't know, and then that can cause learning. Right. So we'll first explain that, and then we'll provide some evidence supporting the effects of retrieval practice. We typically talk about a few different studies. One classic by Roediger and Karpicki from 2006 involves having students repeatedly study, so reading material compared to repeatedly retrieve, just writing out what they can remember. They make predictions about what they think they'll remember in 1 week, and then they're tested to see how much they've retained, how much they've learned. And we show the evidence. So on the predictions, the students that engaged in repeated reading think that they'll perform better than the retrieval practice group. But of course, the opposite is true when we actually get to that final test. And then we'll provide a number of concrete examples, ways that
teachers, educators, students can engage in retrieval practice. And we provide more than one example. So one might be engaging in retrieval through quizzing. Teachers can construct quizzes and you can add spacing in there by asking the students to remember information that was just taught in the last class, asking them to answer questions related to information from last week, last month, and even making connections across information. But we want to go past just talking about tests or quizzes, and we describe other ways, like writing what you can remember on a blank sheet of paper, drawing what you can remember, even creating concept maps from memory or organization, and talking to one another. So really hammering in that this is not a one-size-fits-all. There are a lot of different activities that can leverage retrieval practice, and all of these can be used in a lot of different ways. And we've always engaged in sort of a Q&A session where the teachers and educators can ask questions. Typically, it kind of started with the, 15 minutes maybe at the end of the talk or workshop. But over time, the way we've engaged in Q&A and communication has changed a bit.
So a lot of that change has been the shift from sort of science dissemination, where we're getting up and giving a talk, and at the end, there's a little bit of time for people to ask some questions, to moving to something that looks more like bidirectional communication, where folks are given opportunities to ask questions kind of throughout, and we can engage in some more rigorous discussion about these strategies. And so in particular, we try to, during any kind of talk or workshop now, stop at certain points and have people think about the great things that they're already doing with some evidence-based strategies. So we might say, okay, what are some examples of retrieval practice that you're already using in your teaching? And we give them a little bit of time to write about that. And then we have them break up into usually some sort of small groups or breakout rooms if we're in Zoom world or whatever the case might be. And we have them kind of share some ideas for implementation. Those are different kind of in the short term, things that you could do tomorrow, and in the long term, things that might take a little bit more planning. And we talk about, what challenges might come up and any resources they might need as they engage in that conversation. And then we come back as a big group and we allow folks to kind of share ideas across the room, so that we can really generate a lot of really good ideas. But there are also a lot of questions that come up during that process. And so because of that, we usually provide an opportunity, a way for educators to be able to ask questions anonymously throughout any kind of workshop. So we either provide a QR code if we're in person, or a link to a Google form. And it's a really simple Google form. It has one question that says, what question do you have? And folks can submit it as many times as they want, but it allows folks to either ask questions during our big discussion, and that's great, and we welcome that. But also, if you're in a big group of people, not everybody wants to do that. And so folks can also submit these questions anonymously. And then we have time during these breakouts to read through those questions and tailor a conversation around the most important questions that people have. But as we've gone through this process, there are some questions that come up time and time again, especially when we're talking about retrieval practice. So Althea is going to walk you through a few of those.
So the questions that typically come up when we talk about retrieval practice are things like, there's just never enough time. And in it, when we do this in a more sort of science dissemination way, that is what we kind of view as a roadblock, right? Because there's not much of an opportunity to explore that further, or to work past it, right? We come in and we say, hey, retrieval practice is great. Here's all this evidence. And then we might get questions at the end where someone says, that's great, but, and there's not really much we can do after it. So things like that come up, I don't have enough time. That's great. You've told me how great this is, but I don't have time when I teach to add one more thing. Or yeah, it sounds like that's a really great way to memorize facts, right? Retrieval practice sounds cool, but also sounds like a lot of tests and quizzes. And I want my students to learn something more than that. Or a major concern that I think was already prevalent before the pandemic, but certainly that didn't help things, is my students are already anxious. There's a lot going on for them to deal with, and more tests and quizzes sounds like more anxiety. And the last thing I want to do is to negatively impact my students that way. So instead of just stopping the conversation there, where we presented information and people have some initial questions or challenges that they see, we want to view these as speed bumps instead. And having a more bidirectional communication allows us to do that because we can continue to have the conversation and hopefully work with people to see how retrieval practice can be implemented. So for example, with the potential roadblock of there's never enough time, we instead would view that as, okay, well, let's talk about how we can maybe find time or reframe time or really think about an understanding of what retrieval practice is to see how we can implement it. A lot of times people are using retrieval practice in some form, but maybe because they didn't recognize it as such, they didn't really know that they were already doing it, or maybe the best way to implement it. For example, think, pair, share is a very common activity that a lot of people do in their classrooms. And so understanding that that think part where you have to come up with your own answer or solution or thoughts or ideas on something, that's retrieval practice. We might, instead of saying just think about it first, encourage students to write something down that's sort of an accountability thing to really force retrieval to happen. But even and then sharing that with somebody else, then we're still having to think back to what we know and use that information in some way. That's retrieval practice. Additionally, it's like there are a lot of small activities that people can use that require retrieval practice, like an exit ticket, right? Tell me one thing you learned before you leave today. That's a really low stakes, very short time commitment way to implement retrieval practice. Another thing that's kind of part of this issue of finding time is we know that retrieval practice is effective if you give feedback, right? And so this requires grading. This requires going through and marking. And that can take a lot of time on the part of the instructor. And so there, one way to handle that is to say, okay, one, is this something that needs to be graded? And two, is there another way to give feedback that's maybe not so labor intensive or time intensive? Maybe students take a quiz and then they switch papers with their partner while you go over answers so they can provide feedback to one another, right? And that is takes much less time than going through and marking, you know, 30 different quizzes instead of takes 5 minutes in class. And so that these, again, are ways that we can reframe this roadblock into a speed bump. And I'll have Carolina go through the other ones.
Right. So the second concern that's very often raised is that retrieval practice is for rote memorization or fact learning and isolated fact learning only. And so it's seen as something that's not really useful if what we actually want students to do is to retain deeper knowledge and to have meaningful knowledge of what we teach them. So two things about that. The first one is that basic knowledge is really important. And it's not the same as isolated facts. In fact, I have never really taught a class or went into any classroom where isolated facts are being taught. It's always basic knowledge that are building blocks that are used to connect to each other, to understand concepts in more depth, and you build that knowledge network over time, and you connect those ideas and concepts to get deeper understanding. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is you can do this with retrieval practice because it depends on really what you ask. So if you ask a question that really taps on those smaller basic knowledge aspects, yeah, that's what's going to be reinforced. But if you ask questions that ask students to connect ideas, to apply ideas, or to connect this to something they already know, to their prior knowledge, then you are engaging students in deeper learning and more meaningful learning. So yeah, retrieval practice is there for deeper learning, and it's how you ask the questions and how you guide students through the process. And probably the biggest concern that we have we have to manage, or the expectation that we have to manage, is when teachers tell us, well, we don't need more tests. I already have quite anxious students. Test anxiety really runs high. If you look at the data, it's actually 20 to 40% of student population who will report having or suffering from test anxiety. And it is a concern that's important to address, because test anxiety is associated with lower academic performances and lower well-being. When we talk about retrieval practice as a strategy, we talk about it to implement it in a way that is not scary, that is motivating. So, for example, using low-stake or no-stake quizzes that engages them in the learning and that, you know, encourage them to make mistakes and to learn from the mistakes. Retrieval practice can be done in class quizzes, for example, using technology that allows students to put forward their responses anonymously. So using Kahoot, Mentimeter, any kind of forms can be a stepping stone for this and can be really helpful, because students actually really enjoy answering questions. And if it's not anonymous, it's more difficult for them, but if it's done anonymously, it facilitates that process. Another thing that teachers can do is to do take-home quizzes. So quizzes where students have time to actually come up with an answer, to look at their materials, and so on. I would like to give one example that I use in my own teaching. When teaching level two psychology students, I have three quizzes that they take throughout the semester. Those quizzes are online and are multiple choice quizzes. And I give them two attempts at the quiz. And I tell them, for the first attempt, do the quiz just from memory, not looking at anything. Just use your memory to see what you know and to really engage in that retrieval practice. And then you have a second attempt. And for the second attempt, do whatever you like. You can look at your notes, you can look at your slides, at the textbook, at the readings. And what we're going to do is we're going to use your highest grade of the two attempts. And it really is something that students appreciate, because they can engage in retrieval practice. It's a no-risk strategy for them, because we're using their highest grade, and they really enjoy that quiz experience.
So we really, today we were talking to psychology educators. And so the advice that we had to them was to really engage in a lot of this bidirectional communication, because all of these things that we've just talked about, these issues of finding time and alleviating anxiety and not rote memorization, all of those things we only know about because we've talked to teachers. That's the only way that we find that out. And while all of us are teachers, we all talk to students. There's a difference between being in a K through 12 classroom or a special education classroom, et cetera. And so to all of you who are listening right now, as most of you are probably educators listening to this, a few things. So I would say, first of all, we hope that this is helpful to hear how some of these roadblocks can be turned into speed bumps. But it's important just to know that for any of these strategies that we talk about, they are flexible guiding strategies, which means they're not silver bullets. There are ways that they can be adjusted in order to work in your class with your students, with your materials. And as part of that bidirectional communication, we really encourage you to reach out and ask. So if you feel like you have a roadblock where you can't implement something, we want to know so that we can have that conversation with you. We also really encourage educators to get involved in some research if they can. So there are researchers who are doing some applied research, and we love for educators to be involved in that, because you know what works in your classroom and what you don't think will work in your classroom. And if we're not doing the right research, we need to know that. We need to know what questions you have so that they can be answered. So we'll go ahead and put some ideas in the show notes for maybe some resources if you want to get involved with that. Of course, you're always welcome to just reach out to us too via our contact page. page as well and just let us know what could be useful for you. So you can contact us on our website. It's www.learningscientists.org and let us know if you have some ideas.
So thank you so much for everything, truly, because it's the educators that we've been talking with and listening to, really, in these bi-directional communications that has helped make the Learning Scientist Project so successful, at least what we think is so successful. And so, you know, it's as much everybody who's listening and using the materials as it is ours. And it has really become a very bright and happy corner of our careers and our work. So thank you so much. And we hope to continue to hear from you so that we can keep listening.
This episode is funded by listeners like you. To support our work and gain access to exclusive content, visit our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/learningscientists.